Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, December 10th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 209. I am your host, Austin Walker. Joining me today, sipping a latte. I guess it's a latte. Natalie Watson.
Hi.
There we go. Also, sipping from a big Chicago Bears mug, wearing a Chicago Bears sweater, Patrick Klepek.
First time the only touchdown has gone to an offensive lineman. The only touchdown in a game in the whole Super Bowl era. Just, Manet, I want to get a jersey with your name on it. Thank you.
Good please. Job. Also joining us, presumably sipping from a number of bottles, Rob Zachney has joined us.
Sorry, I need a lot of coffee today. I was up late last night waiting for Santa's sleigh.
Rob, you just lifted a French press.
I was hoping it was going straight into your mouth. Just right up.
It's too hot.
No, it burns. It burns. That thing's really hot.
Don't do that.
I can't. Turns out I can't Ghost Rider this right now.
God damn. All right. So we're gonna jump into why you were up late last night in a moment, Rob. But first, I need everyone's attention because I need help to understand what I'm looking at. What's up? Why is Sonic the Hedgehog? I can't even speak. I'm so verklempt.
I know.
Overwhelmed by the calf muscles of Sonic the Hedgehog, by the realistic arm hair. What is happening in this poster?
I need to find this article about it. Wait, I want to read to something? You about the eyes.
Check
Waypoint.
Eyes. Oh my God, I hadn't seen the eyes. You can see the shape of one of the eyeballs.
No, you can't.
Yes, you absolutely can.
I'm zooming.
Wait,
it's just
a dark silhouette.
No, zoom in.
Zoom in.
Look closer.
The one I've got is a motion poster. It sucks.
Okay.
Just
pause it at the end, like you're a digital native.
No, I'll give you this. I got you.
I got it too. Boom. There we go. Shout outs to Burton Movies Death for just having the screen.
Right.
Here.
So I want to read two quotes. Okay, this is from the Burton Movies Death. Great blog, by the way. They're a really good, fun movie blog to read Rhythm Every Day. So shout outs to them. But they've got some quotes from the producer of Sonic the Hedgehog, Tim Miller.
Tim Miller of Fast and Furious.
Yes.
Not
Crooked Media. Jeez, they're not having a crossover.
Nice pull, Rob. Birth of Who's Death writes, the first thing you probably noticed is the fur. The formerly sleek Sonic has been dragged into the real world, and they're giving his blue body a real-world update, says the film's executive producer, Tim Miller. Quote, that was always stage one of adapting it to what the real world is and what a real animal would be like. It would be weird, and it would feel like he was running around nude if he was some sort of otter-like thing. It was always, for us, fur, and we never considered anything different. It's part of what integrates him into the real world and makes him a real creature. Birth Movies Death. Okay, well, fair enough, we suppose, but what about those muscular legs? What about the hands? Dear merciful God.
He has, like, very human hands in this image.
What are Sonic's eyes going to look like? Traditionally, they're depicted as two pupils set into one. Wide open window, a thing that would be impossible in our world. So what would they look like now? Miller says those have been updated as well. Quote, I don't think Sega was entirely happy with the eye decision. These sorts of things, you go, it's going to look weird if we don't do this. But everything is a discussion. And that's kind of the goal, which is only to change what's necessary and stay true to the rest of it. He's not going to feel like a Pixar character would, because I don't think that's the right aesthetic to make it feel like part of a world. I don't think Sega was entirely happy with the eye decision.
It's a great line.
I love it.
I'm very worried.
I'm so excited.
I love my hirsute boy.
People are going to want to fuck this thing. I'm here for it.
Of course, that's fine.
The eyeballs, he's going to be ripped and weird. And the question is really going to be, are they going to want to fuck Jim Carrey?
Is Jim Carrey? Oh, Jim Carrey is Robotnik. Yeah, they're going to want to fuck Jim Carrey as Robotnik.
Oh, my God.
Have you seen?
Is Robotnik
I rewatched
also
half of The Grinch this weekend.
Nah.
You don't want to fuck Jim Carrey. That movie is.
Someone does.
Grinch, someone does.
Jim Carrey.
You know what? The Grinch is a fucking icon. I stan.
Uh-huh.
Oh, go watch that movie. Please.
I have. The Grinch is out here dismantling corporate boom. Christmas.
Got him.
Fucking on his own with his dog, just minding his own fucking life.
Absolutely.
Absolute goals. I want to fucking live on a mountain with my dog and just fucking eat trash. Anytime.
Unless you hear an air raid siren.
No one's heard that conversation. That conversation's lost in the ether. All right. Well, my suspicion is it's going to look like, what if one of those Pokemon from the Pikachu Detective Pikachu movie just like looked like a person more? And that's scary to me.
I think they just should have cast Tariq Cohen as the new Sonic the Hedgehog, really, is my position. Just, you know, like, I think the Sonic for our times is just the Bears' star running back.
I'm so mad at you.
And I don't think you need any costume. It's clearly he's magical. He's already magical.
As my football team suffers. And
that was such a heartbreaker yesterday.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
Oh my god. Also, I love how the officiating in the final 5 minutes of that game made me not want to watch football ever again.
Agreed. And
but
I'm
I
not
watched
gonna.
Hours more.
I just want to say that Sonic is here. Sonic is snatched. Sonic went to the gym.
Sonic got gains.
Sonic made the gains he needed to make to get faster.
True.
And he's going to be the fastest and the most furriest of we've ever seen him. So I'm happy for him, honestly.
Natalie, if you ever want to like have a career as like an E3 stage presenter, you fucking got the cadence down.
Thank you.
100%.
Oh, thank you. That's next.
If Waypoint doesn't pan out, that's it.
No.
If Waypoint doesn't pan out, you're going to become an E3
stage
presenter. Kato is going to go moderate the Soldier Boy Discord form. Or Discord form.
Seven.
Geez, Discord.
Eight. Nine.
Soldier Boy has a Discord, and on the Discord, there is a counting channel.
It's just called counting.
And there's a bot.
There's a bot that will level you up.
Congratulate you when you've counted enough.
And you have to count to like 11,000 something to get to level one. So let me just tell you, there's dedication.
They're up to like 37,000 or something.
Are those bots, are people scripting into Discord to type, or are they typing?
No, those people are typing.
I got it.
Because you unlock different chat rooms in the Soldier Boy Discord. It's not the Soldier Boy Discord. It's It's SODMG. It's Stacks on Deck Money Gang Discord, which is the label that Soldier Boy runs. And so you unlock different chats depending on what level you reach in that Discord. Soldier Boy's Discord.
Next game.
His next game is counting numbers. We should note that Soldier Boy has a console coming.
Well, yeah.
Soldier Boy does.
How high do I have to count to get a fucking shipment of my Soldier game handheld?
He has our money.
Has it actually charged my credit card? I don't know.
I have no idea. Yeah, I put it on my card and I've had too much shame to see if it's actually run.
We've committed $200 to the Soldier.
$250. Because one of them is 100. One of them is 150. I put in for the 150.
It's been successful enough that he has now organized something called Soldier Tech, which is about recruiting young, energetic technologists that want to be part of the front lines of selling complete ripoff junk to people at high prices.
Listen, anyone could go online and buy a $25 console and resell it for $100, filled with ROMs, filled with stolen games, probably, I'm guessing. But not everyone could do that and also be Soldier Boy.
No.
And
true.
Say Soldier Tech.
And own a Subway.
Does Soldier Boy own a Subway?
Soldier Boy owns a Subway restaurant. Soldier Boy is a fucking entrepreneur.
True.
I don't doubt that, but the Subway thing is interesting. That's smart. That's spreading out your risk.
That's like, Rick Ross owns a bunch of Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of a Subway going out of business?
Soldier Boy furious as his Subway closes after his employees didn't. And then I need to read the end of the sentence and it didn't. 1 second. After his... Okay, Soulja Boy left furious. Breaking news, October 3rd, 2018. This is not that long ago. Soulja Boy left furious as his subway closed after his employees didn't show up. Soulja Boy has been left outraged after the staff employed at the subway branch didn't show up. The Crank That rapper has been quiet on the rap scene for a while now, but he's been keeping himself busy. Last month, he announced that he had purchased a branch of the popular sandwich chain. However, it appears that the store's management may not be up to scratch. The rapper took to Instagram to express his rage this week after the store was forced to close due to a lack of staff. Closed! 3 exclamation points. Due to missing closing shift, ... Sorry, ... read a sign printed on a piece of paper on the door of the store, much to Soulja's dismay. It's Soulja Boy. What the fuck you mean my subway is closed today? You see, that's why you can't give young people jobs, he said to the camera.
Whoa.
How old is he?
He's getting there.
He's, yeah.
28?
He's like 27, 28.
He must be around that, right?
He was like 21 when, like, he popped off, right?
That.
Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. He's 28. He's 28.
28. Oh.
An open source emu console is not gonna fuck you over like that.
He's in his Saturn return. The ages from 27 to 30 is when Saturn returns back into your
house.
Your house.
Your house. Your
local house.
Your house.
Your Waffle House, which he also owns a Waffle House, which I think is a good investment.
So I have never been to a Waffle House, but I really want to.
We should road trip to Waffle House.
Time we go.
I've never been to Waffle House either.
Let's go to E3.
Waffle House is great.
Yeah?
Is there a Waffle House in L.A.?
In L.A.?
I think so. Isn't there like a...
I mean,
there's
maybe not
waffles
the
there.
Waffle House, but like I've gone to like chicken and waffle places. Like,
no,
yeah.
What? No, there's a difference.
Patrick, fuck off.
I want to be clear. There are incredible chicken and waffle places in
there's
L.A.
There's a difference between Roscoe's.
Roscoe's is Reach out. Reach out. Touch that chicken and waffle. Reach out. I need y'all at home to reach out your hands right now. Reach out your hands. Touch the chicken and waffle.
Touch it.
And then I need you to go and donate $29.99 to Austin Walker's Chicken and Waffle Fund. It is what the year commands. All right.
Got my Austin Walker chicken and waffles, and it's a box of Eggos and a bag of Tyson chicken tenders.
Yes, sir, it is. Yes, sir, it is. Yes, sir, it is. The Lord says we provide you with what comes from the soil, and today the soil was Eggos and Tyson chicken and waffles.
Because that's what was on sale at Costco.
You teach a man to... That was what was on sale at Costco, and you teach a man to go to a Roscoe's. That's not much. Anybody could do that. That has you Google Maps. You could do that, but you teach a man to turn.
You know, Roscoe's has got people in it who want to get paid to make those chicken and waffles.
Unlike Soulja Boy Subway, where no one will even show up. I wonder if it stayed closed or if he rehired people. Could you imagine being so rich you buy a franchise Subway and no one shows up? Like someone no call, no shows once, and you're like, close it all down. Fuck it. I guess I don't own a business anymore.
I want that kind of.
You're trying to have that wealth.
That's that fucking don't give a fuck wealth.
And he's out there blaming millennials when he's a millennial.
I know.
These young people. What are you talking about?
Maybe he's talking about Gen Z. I think he's turned on Natalie's generation already. Yo, Natalie just gave me the meanest look I've ever seen in my life. She does not want the association.
She's turning on Soulja, too.
I am not Gen Z.
Natalie's not Gen Z.
I will fight this till I die.
Have you ever...
What?
Which will be a full generation after the millennials die.
If this doesn't work out, pretend you're Gen Z. That's how you'll get hired other places.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's what everyone
for
wants
now,
Gen Z right
you
now.
You know, I got to align myself with my surroundings. Right now, I'm surrounded by millennials.
I see.
So I'm a millennial.
Social chameleon, generational chameleon. You're on the
cusp. I adapt. I change.
True.
I survive.
Speaking of things surviving and not surviving, Rob Zachney, you were up very late last night, and I was a little afraid you were not going to survive because you were so deep in your investigations of others who did not survive. You have been playing Return of the Obra Dinn until 4 a.m.
I sure have. I turned a corner with that game. I committed to the notebook life. Not the in-game notebook.
The IRL?
Real notebook in your hands.
Oh, yeah. Like,
got them
like,
field notes. You got them.
Let me see it. Can I see it?
Yeah. Let me.
Hell yeah. I'm excited. Rob is producing a prop.
Let me see that chicken scratch.
That's what I have too. I need the one with the diagram.
Hold on.
You need the one with the diagram.
Diagram.
Oh, is it from the poker game?
No. So it's a little scratch diagram, but
hell yeah.
So I needed to start outlining the flow of combat during this one sequence and who went where, and to figure out
Amazing.
To sort of track who and like how this yeah. entire thing unfolded, so I could narrow down like what probably like because. There's a point where you have to start making inferences about, like, just what happened to some
people.
Can
we set this up in case people missed us talk about Oberdin when it first came out? That way people know what you mean when you say inferences.
Through a magical MacGuffin, you are aboard this ghost ship, and what you are doing is you find the places where somebody died, and you access the final moments of that person's life. But you don't just get, like, it's not like an... It's not like just an audio diary or anything like that. What you have is a limited area tableau recreating everything that was happening in their immediate vicinity.
Okay, remember when we were talking about Solas last week and how he goes into the rift?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it's like, this.
It's that.
It's that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally.
I don't think anyone's going to get much clarity off the Solas explanation, honestly.
I did,
like,
even though I've played Oberdin. Anyway.
Anyway, so you get this entire, like... tableau unfolded that shows like what everyone else around the person who was dying was up to at that moment. And what you will end up doing is a lot of times in this game, because it turns out the Oberdin is on one cursed fucking voyage. There are sequences in which people died in quick succession. And so a lot of what you end up doing is you're sort of tracking your way back to, who was the first person to die during this incident? And you begin reconstructing the flow of time and what all unfolded to connect the first victim to the events that finally claimed the last person in that sequence. And along the way, you are trying to match up. You have a list of the crew members, but you don't know what any of them looked like. You have some sketches that were done during happier times aboard ship that show everyone who's part of that crew.
Unlabeled. There's no... It's not like, and this is Jim.
Right. You have to do that. And what you are doing over the course of this game is you are filling in, like, which person, like, which body that you found on deck, who was it, what killed them, and if applicable, who killed them. But you only find out if you're right if you get three of those complete, like, cards complete. So you have to, like, basically you have to make 9 correct guesses about 3 different people before the game is like, all right, that stuff is locked in, and now you can, now that stuff is, like, firmly identified.
You can stop wondering. You can stop. Yeah. You can kind of free up that RAM in your brain that's been like, fuck, am I right? There's nothing worse.
This person in the picture is that dude.
Yes, 100%. And then you start to use that to identify other people by association. Mm-hmm. There's nothing worse than filling in that 9th thing and the music cue not coming. Because when you get the 9th, when you fill in that final one, it does like a little cool music jingle. That I don't remember the exact way it goes, but maybe Rob does, because Rob...
Well, the music is great just overall. But...
Yeah. But if you don't hear it and you're like, fuck, what did I mess up? Shit. Fuck. God damn it.
But it is so fucking satisfying when you start to get on a run, because it is the feeling of the puzzle pieces coming together. Like that first, that first person to identify can sometimes... Early on, they do give you people that are really easy to identify. Like, the first people you encounter is somebody screaming, Captain! Captain! He's like, how dare you betray me, you bastard!
Right.
And, like, you have a pretty good guess about, like, who those people are.
Mm-hmm.
But later on, and I think there's something interesting happening here, too, which is the officers and leadership of the ship are pretty easy to identify. They wear the uniforms. They're major characters in the story. The top men...
Are up in the sails and who are working the rigging and all that stuff.
The common sailors, all these folks are just kind of anonymous in the story. They're there for everything, but they're not major characters. And so there's kind of a, there's a bit of like almost like class commentary here as well, in which like a lot of these folks, you are trying to figure out who they were, even though they never had the kind of agency that let them do anything in the story. Like things happen to them, but there's never a point where nobody ever talked to them. Nobody ever said their name. You just have to sort of like figure out by process of elimination. Well, you know, this guy, you know, I know that the other, you know, the other English topman got killed somewhere else. I hear this guy screaming. Sounds English to me. So he's probably this other guy.
You
and
often
actually,
that specific, there is a specific sequence in which with the topmen, who again are like up in the sails and the rigging and up on the masts and stuff, where it's like, all right, there are like seven people here and they are all very clearly different nationalities.
Yeah.
Am I for real going to go through this book and be like, all right, this guy looks East Asian to me. There is one Chinese dude in who's listed as a topman in the crew like registry or whatever.
Yeah.
I guess this is him. I'll mark it down here for now. And that feels like vaguely uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I want to be clear. I don't think this is like a racist system or something like that. But you are constantly like, okay, that guy sounds Russian? Question mark? Like, I don't know what he's saying. But I guess for now, I'll mark him in there. And you're doing the job of an insurance, not adjuster. What's the real word for this?
Like,
auditor. Yeah, you're basically
claims adjuster.
Thank you. Yeah. And so you are part of the modern like capitalist empire machine who is going around to basically say like, who gets money from this, who doesn't get money from this, who was killed by an act of God versus who was killed by like the failure of the company, who was owed money by this insurance policy. And so like in this very weird way, you are the limb of this part of empire. And so you're often playing inside of that logic, which is especially fascinating because one of the things, I don't know how far in you are, but like there is the intersection between this, is it the Dutch East India Company?
I think you're the British East India Company.
Oh, the British, right. Oh, okay. With kind of the Formosan like dignitaries and like royalty or something. And there's something happening there without getting into spoilers because like this game has some big ass spoilers in it. There's some stuff going on there that ends up. So I only played about halfway through is my guess. And I'm super curious how it ends up tackling some of the stuff that happens with the Formosans, because at moments it felt like there was risk of it leaning towards an orientalization or an exoticization and things here are strange in the Far East, you know. And I don't know. I'm curious, Robbie. Maybe further.
It does, but the thing you have to remember is Obra Dinn is pulp. This is a gothic pulp novel that you are reconstructing after the fact. And so there is an element of these Formosan dignitaries were in touch with some sort of ancient secret artifact. Was it cursed? May have been. All sorts of wild shit happened they seem to know about. So that is definitely in this game. On the other hand, it's a game about a cursed group of like arrogant British like imperial officers
driving the ship towards disaster at all times.
Yeah, with their greed, their venality, like steering the ship into catastrophe because they start fucking with things that they don't understand, and they'll be damned if they let a Chinese dude tell them not to. Literally, they get warnings. And they're like, fuck it. I think, what if I just stole some shit instead? but the other thing, like, it's interesting how it plays with this stuff. For instance, one of the things you realize as you start filling in the blanks is in those pictures of life aboard ship, it sort of seems like topmen stuck together. They hung out together. But also, even among those groups, sailors hung out with people from the same country as them. And so what you realize is when you see a group of dudes sitting together and one of them turns out to be like Indian, for instance, the odds are very good the other like three, four guys in that conversation circle are also going to be Indian. And I think that's what I do kind of like about this is as you sort of unpack what happened in this game, you realize the degree to which all these other groups and all these other people are just there to, like, serve the ship and its mm-hmm. needs. But, like, they're not, like, again, nobody talks to them. They're basically, like, just invisible helpers in a lot of ways. Like, nobody asks, nobody canvasses their opinion. The only time somebody talks to one of the Chinese crewmen is to get him to translate for right. one of the Formosans. And I think there's... One, actually, like, this sort of tracks with what little I know of, like, life aboard ship in this era, because they're all these sort of polyglot, multinational operations. But two, I think there's an interesting narrative here in which a lot of folks aboard this ship find themselves dragged along through further into the dysfunction and malfeasance of their predominantly white English commanding officers,
mm-hmm.
and there's no way for them to express, like, there's no way to get off it, there's no way to stop it, nobody listens, nobody cares, and that's one of the things that you start unpacking over the course of this game, is the degree to which, at what point did order break down, at what point did various groups of these guys decide either they're going to stick to the chain of command or they're going to make a break for
right.
getting out of this with something, be it their lives, be it with money.
Yeah, I is close to the top of my list of things I need to revisit and try to get through before I finalize my Game of the Year list later this week, which, as a heads up for people listening, we are in the process of, this week is the week we're going to start recording a lot of our end-of-year stuff and writing and editing a lot of our end-of-year stuff. That's going to be coming out over the next, not this week and next week, but next week and the week after that. Mm-hmm. We're going to kind of expand things out in that way. It's going to be a lot of podcasts this year and a lot of, some editorial stuff still, but less than what we've done in the past. We really wanted to focus in on kind of making sure that we were having the conversations we wanted to have this year instead of just kind of, and also making it so that we could actually take some time off around the holidays instead of being up super late.
Let's not edit on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, that would be great this year. It'd be fantastic if we could do that. So look forward to that stuff. But also, if content's a little slim this week, that's why. So just a heads up on that note. But speaking of our end of year and Game of the Year lists, one of the things that's interesting here is, Rob, you hit Oberdin over the weekend. And we're like, fuck, this game is good. This is shaking up my list. Patrick, you also hit something that has made you think maybe your list that you thought was final is not final. You want to talk about Mutant Year Zero? You were so sure last week. You were so sure that you're like, it's locked.
Well, because, like, we were figuring out our scheduling, and, like, there was a chance that, like, Rob and I were going to have to talk about our lists, like, early, like, locking some stuff in, like, pretty early on. So, like, I figured out the list. Haven't figured out the order, but the order's not that important to me once I've got it down to 10. Like, that's just kind of a... I got to figure out 1, 2, and 3, and then the rest is sort of a crapshoot. I felt pretty good about my list. I made some hard choices. I got some games off there. I was like, all right. Like, had a, at the last second, like, you know, I don't know if I can talk about that game yet. A game I was playing, I was like, maybe this will be one that jumps in there. Like, it didn't. I started playing after reading this write-up on Rock, Paper, Shotgun about, Mutant Year Zero, XCOM-y...
XCOM, tactics. Not former communist. Although, though, given the setting of that game, possibly.
Well, given that it's like, definitely pulling from the Stalker lineage of terms of its, like, setting and a tone. A squad-based, the XCOM is, like, probably the closest immediate analogy, in which you're controlling starting as a squad of two, expanding to a squad of three, and then you get more characters you can swap in and out. You have, like, direct control, the actual, like, minute-to-minute, like, combat gameplay is very much like XCOM. If you've played XCOM, like, although there are different, like, sort of, like, features it's playing with, like, it is... If you've played XCOM, you understand, like, the frame of mind to understand this game. Like, sort of, like, the big wrinkle amongst its number of wrinkles is the sort of, like, exploratory slash stealth aspect. So rather than just picking a mission and then just getting dropped into a combat scenario in which what you're doing before combat is largely just about, like, setting up, like, where your soldiers are going to go and, like, you know, trying to get a jump on the first turn. This game actually has some stealth mechanics in which characters will be going through different, or enemies will be going through different routines. Like, so you'll see some soldiers having a conversation, and then once that conversation wraps, they will start walking away. And then the game has sort of like this sort of like heat circle around them that lets you know, hey, if you go into that circle, they're going to see you, and then combat's going to start. And so what you can do is the game has, there's both like sort of distance that enemies can hear you at, and then there's also enemies can shout to other compatriots to kind of bring them in as reinforcement. So what you are hoping to do is like wait for them to get far enough away and either hopefully take them out so there's enough distance between you and them and their ability to call in reinforcements, or using like your much weaker silent weapons, but ones that like hopefully if you kind of gather them together, like if you can get three shots off, you can take a guy out. And so, because what you'll find is like, I think the narrative around this game has been like, ah, it's super hard. Yeah. Like it's brutal, yep. Man. It's like a really tough strategy game. And like, in no world am I going to say it's easy. One thing I'll say is like the game defaults you to starting on hard, in which your characters only recover half of their health after each combat encounter. Like, don't do that. Just like slide it back down to normal. I mean, yeah. Do it if like that's what you know what you're in for. But like for someone like myself, I was like, okay, like no game.
I'm good.
Like if you set it at normal, you get your health back after each encounter. And so the balances were sort of set in that direction. But so I think what might be happening with some of these people, I don't know if this is for sure. Maybe they are. Maybe I am just finding it easier than them. I don't know. But I suspect that they're not taking advantage and both gaming sort of like the stealthing aspect of the game. So like, for example, like there will be times where like a guy peels off just far enough away. And, like, I have, like, a two-second window to start an ambush. And the ambush lets you, like, kind of slot your characters, like, behind cover or just get your three shots off. And sometimes those three shots won't all land. Like, at 75% will become a miss. And I'll just, like, reload that save and just like, give it another go.
Yeah.
Or what I'll end up doing is positioning my characters even, just get them one square away.
Right, so like,
give me the 100%. So, like, you can get 100%. So you can get your shot will not miss, and so if you can get an enemy in the right position with your characters in the right position,
just a mutant duck rolls up on him with a fucking silenced pistol and is like boom, actually boom because it's silenced.
Yeah, I have not. Yeah, somehow got this far in.
Also, really quick, just want to note that stuff, the moving around stealth stuff, is real time, which is an important thing because people are thinking XCOM in their minds, but like they're
there's like a commandos element or
100%.
Shadow Tactics.
Yeah. So I'm playing with a mouse, or I'm playing with a controller, not with a mouse and keyboard. You have just direct control over your whole squad, but you can also be like, all right, I'm going to leave one person here, I'm going to switch from my duck mutant to my boar mutant and walk my boar mutant over to a tree nearby and hit a button to hide him there, and then I'm going to bring my, like, frog lady and have
or, like,
her hop
pig,
up.
Or, like, not just some tedious, like, yammer.
Yeah, not just someone who's boring at parties, yeah. and then I'll move my frog lady up to high ground because she has bonus. So, like, I'll move her to the top of, like, a swing set or, like, a slide because she has bonuses from height or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Patrick, do you want to talk about the setting? Because for me, so much of the stuff that you're describing is important. The stealth stuff is cool. I love killing the dudes when they peel off. I like the combat stuff.
Yeah.
But so
the screenshots that you guys sent in chat were so good.
Yeah.
Like that writing is actually.
Yeah, it's like a
good.
Charming, charming, charming game.
Yeah, and it's not. It's funny, but it's not. Capital F funny. Like, it's not a comedic game. It has a lot of dark humor that, so like the world is set in, there was some sort of plague that took out, I think it says, like I picked up on, like destroyed most of humanity within, you know, a couple of decades, like some sort of plague that just wiped out. It's kind of described as like nature's backlash or something like that. But the reason it's sort of vague on what happened is like this picks up hundreds of years later, in which the main characters you have, the pig or the boar and the duck, are they themselves like rarities. Like they are mutant animals that are capable of speech and they are unique amongst like the human survivors. But there's just not much of an understanding of like what happened previously. So a lot of what is so funny about this game is like the way the dialogue is written, where the observations are crafted, are just people that don't understand what humanity was doing. So like they come across structures like a slide, like they I think there's like this one bit where they come across a slide and they're like what was the I think
it was like a toy house
oh that's what it was
slide
yeah.
on. It was it's, like Like one of those little houses for kids.
Yeah, I got it. It's they walk to like a little tiny toddler slide with a toy house, and Borman, who is the boar, says, "Elder Almighty, I've seen some crazy shit in the zone, but this takes the bullet. This house must have belonged to some small people. I mean small. That is just the weirdest."
And then there's another one where you come across, well, I'll just read the line. It says, "That building there, the House of Bones, it was a fortress full of tiny flesh-eating monsters called students. They came here every day to learn how to become bigger monsters." And it's funny on its face, but part of what makes it click and what makes me has me like outright cackling as I'm
because this could be like really cringe.
It could be cringe and so corny, and other games have done that. Like Horizon Zero Dawn did some of this stuff, and I was like, oh please no.
Yeah,
the voice acting is great. It is dry. Yeah. It is, but not, and it's just, it's good enough to like carry the dialogue in a way that it's been a long time since I've played a game that within like a minute has painted an entire world for me effortlessly.
Yeah.
Like,
it tosses you in head first. It's a really hard.
Yes. And it just dunks works. You in.
And it just
There's
works.
No.
Like, okay, I'm stalkers. I'm out in the wilderness trying to get back to base. I have some scrap. And these guys are talking like they understand this place and in ways that are like doing exposition work to make me understand that there are raiders out in the wilderness and there's a place called the Ark and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But like, I just care about this duck and this boar immediately. Like, immediately I care about them. They're best friends. I love them. I ship them. They're fantastic. Let's go. And that's so rare because the game, when we first saw a trailer for this game, I think I certainly, and I suspect other people too, were like, okay, this is going to be more in line with like Elix or the Gothic games, like Eastern European, like RPGs, computer RPGs that have a certain self-serious attitude and there's a place for those. I'm not throwing those under the bus. I'm not saying like, and
the
fuck
full
them.
Name of this game is Mutant Year Zero Road to Eden.
That is like, the name.
The
of
only
this
thing
game.
We wrote about this was me doing like a snide, snarky post being like, yo, this title sucks, but this game looks great. Mm-hmm. That like, I'm gonna be bummed if this game gets overlooked because people looked at that title and went, that sounds like a weird like budget game that I'm not gonna try. And To the developer's credit, like, they, like, played a... It was tongue-in-cheek because I was also using that as a way to call attention to the game. And they picked up on that and played along. But, yeah, continue.
It's... I was just saying the thing. It was, like, it's so charming. It really, really is. And I think that's the part of it. That's the part of it where, like, sometimes when you play a game before release or ahead, you know, before a lot of people can see it, you're like, I'm being charmed by this. Is this just my personal sense of humor or my personal sense of like interest in this style of game? Or is this thing going to reach a wider audience? And the fact that Patrick has responded well to it has been like, yeah, okay. This game's all right. Like this game isn't just like scratching my, like hitting my boxes, which I would have been like, yeah, cool. I like it a lot. It's one, like, knowing that it can hit a wider audience and that makes me more encouraged to recommend it to people because it feels like a good way to get some people into this style of tactical game because it has things like characters and humor that you don't normally get other places. Mm-hmm. No offense to XCOM, like which I love. But
But it is the kind of thing that XCOM had that. Because XCOM is probably...
it has its maybe own dark comedy here and there, but not like this.
I wish XCOM had like more of a like a plot and story structures. I think it would allow more people... like. That's not a game that I ever thought I would like, and I really got into that despite the lack of story. Mm-hmm. But I think if it had more characters, world building, like more people would realize, like, oh, even I can get into games like this. Like I found this game to be as approachable as XCOM. I'm not a strategy person. Like there are occasionally games that scratch that itch, like for me. Like I really like Fire Emblem. I really like XCOM. I beat, you know, both XCOM games. Like I beaten the last couple Fire Emblems, and like this game is absolutely in that wheelhouse. So even if you're someone that's like, I don't play strategy or tactics games, like, but you found yourself like strangely compelled by an Into the Breach or an XCOM, and specifically an XCOM, like this is just a more like character based XCOM. And like, don't be put off by the difficulty, because the difficulty is often so what ends up happening in the combat encounters is that, you know, one, just liberally use save and reload. Like, I don't have any problems doing that. Like, the game is difficult enough that, like, I don't feel shitty if I'm going back to try and game it a little bit. And you can't, like, save mid-combat. So, like, once, you know, fighting begins, like, then, you know, you're just in it. So it's not like I'm, like scum saving through each shot to try and get a better reroll. But what'll happen is like you'll like fire a shot and it's like, okay, I've got three enemies I'm dealing with. Well, then all of a sudden, like some guy will shout out and then like four dudes come from a different area. And what that's telling you is actually you need to reload, go back. You didn't fully explore the map because the game is almost never going to put you in a position where you're completely overwhelmed in that way. That's often a punishment because you haven't explored the exploratory part of the sort of that mission, that area. And they're all like small enough that like within 10 minutes you can kind of get a lay of the land. And I just had this amazing encounter last, like I was all hyped from the Bears game and I was like, it's 11:15. I need to go to bed. But I was like, I can't. Like I actually need to wind down. So maybe I'll play a tactics game for 45 minutes. And it was my first encounter where you had opposing factions. So there's an area. So they're like just random robots like roaming around this world occasionally. And off the times I've encountered the robots so far have been these things called medbots, which they don't attack you. But as you're trying to like whittle down the numbers of the ghouls and other enemy types you come across, they're just going and reviving those enemies. They don't revive them to full health, but they'll give them like half health and they'll just be annoying and you have to like waste a turn to try and take them down. The problem is the medbots are like, they're super armored up. Like they take a ton of hits to take down. So it introduces like this really weird dynamic, but the medbots are always aligned with like the ghouls or whatever creatures you're coming across. Like there's nothing you can do to get the medbot to like interfere with whoever else is on the screen. But this is the first time where I came across like cop robots who were clearly just there to protect that area. Maybe the school, I don't know. It was called the House of Bones, as cops are wont to do. And so I was like, this game doesn't even tell you explicitly, like there's no tutorial that says, yo, like factions are a thing, like try and bait these folks into one another. I said, well, I'm just gonna, okay, hit save right in front of, like I got my sniper set up and I set up this shot. Sniped one of the robots square in the head. They come running over to me. That robot makes a squealing noise. That alerts all, like, the six or seven. Like, it was way too many humans for me wanting to take on at once. And as I'm running away, like, they're taking pot shots at me. My sniper gets down to, like, one health, but manages to cross behind a building, heal, and my other dudes are just hanging out and watching. And then I just watched for seven turns as these dudes ripped each other apart. And then occasionally my sniper would just kind of, like, tilt its head out, like take a couple of easy shots that would distract in my directions, but inevitably the robots would kind of like fuck things up. It's a really good game. I'm 6 hours in. I've heard it's like 10 to 15 or something like that. It feels like I'm roughly halfway through. It has shook me and my game of the year list. It's a game that I don't know if I'll finish before I have to lock, but I like it enough that even though I try and push back against like Regency bias of like, mm-hmm. you know, trying to remember, like, I loved Monster Hunter World a lot. Like, do not forget how much I loved that game, even though I haven't played it in 11 months. This game is probably going to knock something off, because even though I haven't finished it, I love it so much halfway through that I'm willing to commit. And, I know you've been having similar issues with that, Austin, as you've...
I am. We'll wrap back around to me talking about Ashen, I think, after the break. First, actually, I want to talk about Smash. So let's come back. Take a break. Let's come back. I want to hear about Smash from Kato and Natalie, who've been playing it. And then we'll talk about some Ashen. And then Natalie's giving me a look because I know she really wants to talk about something else.
Yeah.
More magic. We'll be right back.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project... there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I got a package. A Battle Worth Winning, 1 out of 100. Battle Royale is now on PlayStation. There's like a commemorative token.
These are called challenge coins. Thank you very much.
I got a challenge coin.
Shit.
Is this stolen valor? If I have this, it says this is Battle Royale.
No, we got that on tape.
This
y'all,
is player
y'all,
and, we did player win. Unknown's those, battlegrounds to be
player unknown's Austin battlegrounds. Also served. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. It says someone from Sony sent us this package that I'm describing. There's a pin.
Oh, I thought that was an SD card.
No, it does have a code on it for presumably
PUBG on
PUBG,
PS4.
I guess it costs money still, right?
Yeah.
Everywhere?
Yeah.
It's not free anywhere.
It's never
yet?
Free.
Oh, boy. Well, that's on PlayStation now. I have not played it on PS4 yet. There's a map. There's a lot going on here. But what is, I don't know. I'm not going to look through all this, right? We're recording a podcast. Now is not the time to look at a map.
Loot, loot.
Land, loot. And then there's other stuff. There's an instruction
survive.
Manual. I don't know.
It's
anyway.
Their slogan.
There's a new map on PC in the test server.
That sounds
We'll hit that real quick before we talk about Smash. Rob and I played some of that along with both Joels. Joel, publisher Joel, and friend of the site.
Joel Squared.
Joel Squared, yeah. That map is like a winter map.
Ooh.
The new map. Do you remember what it's called, Rob? Do you remember if it has like a...
No, I do not remember.
Winter map.
Winter.
There's snowmobiles. It's dense. It's like it's bigger than the small map than Sanghok and smaller than Erangel or Miramar. And it's dense. It's like, Patrick, we should stream some of this somehow.
Okay.
In our very busy next few weeks.
How does it...
Well, it's got like really wonderfully specific locations. Like, for instance, there's a lake on that map. There's a lake and some farm fields near it that together create a lot of different, like, tactical situations and terrains that you have to be considered. Like, the lake itself and those open fields, they're bordered by, like, these little resort villages. And they are just... Even if nothing happens, they're just like centers of dread and paranoia because it's just open ground the entire way. And so like you will have, like our group did end up making these huge detours through the map and driving through like 3-4 different possible ambush locations just to avoid going as the crow flies across
this
like
big
a
open area
wheat field.
There's a lot of like really cool unique things. There's a dinosaur park. There's like a dino. It's called Dino Park, and it's like a amusement park or like a, I guess it's more like a field trip science park with like lots of model T-Rexes.
Little tar pits in some ways.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, exactly. Where there's like a big fake volcano that has smoke spewing out of it. There's a ski resort area. There's like a bunch. All those locations seemed really cool.
Yeah.
It was just fun to play that game again. It's been so long since I really dug in.
I know the snow map has been in development for a while. I feel like it was announced forever ago. But does any of it feel like a response to Ring of Elysium or like somehow
is,
in conversation with?
No, not really. Ring is so vertical in comparison to this. Like there are all those mountains you can climb with the climbing gear or like, there's lots of like doing stuff in the air with hang gliders and snowboarding moves across the map so fast in Ring of Elysium.
Mm-hmm.
None of that stuff is here really. And in some ways, like it does still make it feel like PUBG is not evolving in that way, which is a bummer, but also, I don't know, like I want there should be this type of battle royale shooter for people like Rob and people like me who maybe like want the slightly more tactical, slower military feeling than, you know, Fortnite is doing some wild stuff right now. Fortnite Season 7 is happening. And there's like planes in that thing.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. I think it might even make it more of a game that I would like to play because it's a little more like Battlefield weirdness, wild nonsense, storytelling type stuff.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be giving me this feeling of like,
What attachments do I have?
Moving from house to house, moving room to room, trying to clear a bunch of space. That stuff is so fun and still very, very just like unique. So,
did you have any footprint moments? Like,
well, so we were playing squads, and the thing is, like, we were talking about this a little bit. The density of the map is such, and just the dynamics of squads in general, is that you don't have a lot of situations where you're needing to track people.
Right.
And so, like, it's easy to imagine, like, in solos or duo, that at some point you would sort of be looking for the passage of other players and using footprints. But in squads, basically, it's like you see one person, there's probably 2-3 others out there. All hell breaks loose. You're not tracking it.
Yeah, true.
But I can imagine in solos or duos it would definitely come up. I had a good time.
Joel remains good.
Both Joels remain good. Yeah, totally. Joel Fowler, like what we started playing, and our Joel, Waypoint Joel, was just immediately just getting kills.
Damn.
But like without calling them out, it would just be like, I'd be like, all right, what's going on? I just like see a body in the corner. And I'd be like, what? There's an AK over here. He's like, yeah, I killed that guy. Like, oh, word? Okay. You didn't say you were in trouble. It's like, I wasn't.
Like, there is this, there is this like ridiculous melee in this like old European, like an old town type area.
God, that
where
whole
like
area was so
there's
good.
An elevated, there's like an elevated stone road, the high street, and then there's like some lower streets, and there's a church, all this stuff. It's really complicated, like geography mm-hmm. in there. And Joel was just running around like the Predator through those buildings and just like wiped out like a full team of people and then got started on the next.
Love it.
And the rest of us are like cowering, like we're trying to figure out like one person.
Out
like, is he still in there? Is he in that window? I don't know. And Joel's just quietly like, you know, you hear like footsteps, pop, pop, pop. And okay, I got one.
It was very good. That was very good. We gotta do some Breakfast and Battlegrounds again. We gotta show off this map. We have to figure out someday in the next couple of weeks where we can jump in for an extended time.
Yeah.
All right. Smash Brothers. Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. It is here. Everyone is here.
Everyone
is here, including Kato.
Hell yeah.
Hey Kato, how are you doing?
Good, great.
You did the Destiny raid this weekend? Did you also sneak in some time?
Every time there was a loading screen or every time someone took a break for the raid or whatever, we're just like
Smash time.
Smashing. Yeah. Absolutely. The whole it's really great.
So we ran a review from you about the single player mode, World of Light, basically.
Which is what I continue to keep playing. Like,
can you give us like the high level on what World of Light is and
so
why you like it?
There's this new system that they call Spirits, where basically they've added a million, I don't know how many actually, it's probably like
a million.
Yeah.
7 million.
every character you can ever think of from any franchise that's ever touched a Nintendo console at some point. So like, I don't know, even like old like Game and Watch stuff, there's like specific like characters from there that like before they had consoles, right? And like things from like series that you've probably even never even heard of because they're old, some like weird Capcom thing that was a one-off that never had a sequel or
but
whatever.
happened to show up on the Nintendo Wii or the NES or whatever it is, GameCube. Right, like there are like Battalion Wars characters in Spirits.
I don't even know what that is, but yes, I'm sure there are. And basically, these spirits are kind of these equipable things that change the stats of your character. And this single player mode, World of Light, you start as Kirby. Everyone else has been,
killed.
Captured. Actually, they don't kill them.
They're dead.
Yeah, they look like they fucking disintegrate. But what's happening is they're being teleported.
They're dead.
And they're being cloned.
The new ones are being cloned. Yeah, those are new clones.
Those are new. Those are different clones.
Those are fresh.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right,
the freshies.
But the also, like the sense of the self, right? Like the memory, the second the memories stop, you know, making
right. We've all played Soma. We all.
So you move around this large, beautiful map, like hand drawn overworld map, and basically there's different paths you can take, and each path takes you to a different fight with one of these spirits. And essentially what they do is they take one of the characters that are in the game out of the roster of 76, 78 or something, I forget the exact number, and they tweak them through items or through just like settings in the game to make the fight more like the spirit that it's supposed to be embodying. The example I always go back to that's really fun was Celeste from the Animal Crossing games is an owl. She's always asleep in the game because owls are asleep during the day.
Right.
And so it's a fight against a Jigglypuff that has this move called Rest. When you rest as Jigglypuff, you fall asleep. But if anyone's touching you when you do that, it does a ton of damage and can often kill someone if they're anywhere above like half HP or whatever.
I really like the Street Fighter ones. First of all, they're straight up. So, like, the World of Light has, like, dungeons in it or, like, little sub-maps, basically.
Yeah, that's it. I just found, like, the first one of those because I've been, like, sticking to the overworld map. And then I saw a pipe. I'm like, wait, where does that go? I haven't figured that out.
Nintendo
and it goes
game,
down under and there's a separate map with like multiple paths, and like one path leads to a button that I have to hit in order to get to another. Like there's like this weird like pathing thing. We have to decide like which way you want to go. And like,
have you seen the Street Fighter one yet?
No, I haven't.
What, very funny.
There's a Street Fighter like sub level.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
It's the map of the world.
Oh really?
And like you take from, a plane
oh
from place
my God,
to place. And
that
makes,
sounds
like,
so
the
great.
Street Fighter 2 plane noise. And so one of the things that happens with all the Street Fighter spirit fights is like only Ken and Ryu are in this game as Street Fighter characters, but there are spirits for Blanka and for, you know, everybody else. I don't remember who is who I don't remember like who is Blanka or who is M. Bison or whatever.
So do they give Blanka that thing where you jump and you turn into electricity?
I don't know.
I feel like that's what that's the other fun thing is like when you hear about a spirit, just being like, I wonder how they're gonna do that. Like, or like when you see a spirit on the board, like I wonder what the thing is gonna be.
How are they gonna do it? So like all the Street Fighter ones, one of the big ones is just like they limit how high you can jump. And they make it so that like they add like reflect or something to make the projectiles not do as much knockback or something like that. So it ends up being a situation where it's like, oh wow, this feels like a fighting game.
Right.
Like it feels like a traditional fighting game, a 2D, like a Street Fighter thing.
Absolutely.
Natalie, you've been playing it also. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts? How far in are you, but what are you spending your time with?
I've been playing a lot of the World of Light mode as well. And yeah, I really like the creativity of like the modifiers that they're like modifiers that they add to the fight, and the creativity there is like super fun and makes me really curious and makes me want to play more of them. The one thing that I'll say is I wish that the World of Light fights counted towards getting fighters.
Yeah, new characters. You start with just Kirby and you start unlocking from there.
Well, so it's like a separate... So you unlock characters within World of Light to play them in the World of Light mode, but those do not translate to...
If you unlock someone first in World of Light, you also get them in multiplayer. The thing is that you unlock much faster in multiplayer, so you're probably going to hit them there first.
Gotcha. I see.
But, okay. And do they unlock from multiplayer back into World of Light? Or
no.
Okay,
that's
so
the thing.
That's the
it doesn't go. Yeah.
So, and to unlock new characters, you need to have completed a certain number of fights? Or
essentially, they're on the map kind of spread out.
No, but I'm okay. So you can do the in World of Light that way.
Yeah, yeah.
You just find them and fight them and you unlock them. But for just like, if I want to play as Snake right now.
Right.
I bought this game.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Solid Snake.
Well, I have some sad news for you.
New York Dan Riker, and I love
still
Solid.
Haven't.
And you've been playing this game for like a week.
Yeah, like, it's basically, it seems to be like if you're just playing multiplayer against a human, this is a specific thing I learned also. For some reason, if it's against a human, it's about every 10 minutes. If you're playing against a computer, it's a little bit longer for some reason.
Weird.
I don't understand what the math is behind this, but it's basically just like a random amount of time, and then it's a random person.
But there's also specific like qualifiers. So if you, for example, like play, this is totally made up, but if you like play someone as Donkey Kong. Like, if you're playing as Donkey Kong, you unlock a specific character. So, like,
Really?
Each character...
Interesting.
Also, while being, like, if you look up, like, how to unlock blah, blah, blah in SSBU, there are, like, other specific, like, instances that can unlock the characters.
Okay, yeah. So, like, I'm looking at a chart now. So, it's, like, Mario will first unlock... It's, like, Sonic, then Bayonetta, then...
Oh, I hadn't seen this
then
list.
Then Little Mac, then Ike... Then et cetera. Whereas if you're playing as Donkey Kong, it's like Bowser and then Pokemon Trainer and then that's interesting.
This makes sense.
And then there's also
that would only be for classic mode. Anyway, the point is it is hard to unlock characters. It's not hard, it takes time to unlock characters in this game, which is
why people have like found a way around it by like pre the patch, if you got the physical copy, there was like a sort of workaround where you could start the game, you fight like one fight in just regular Smash against a computer, and whether you win or lose, you get a challenger fight after, and then after fighting the challenger, you quit the game and then start up again and like just go through that process.
Oh my God, that sounds like work.
And I think they patched it in the latest patch, so if you never download the patch, you can keep doing
you
this.
Can just unlock
I've heard that it still sort of works like with the new
even with that technique, it still feels like that takes forever. There's 60 some characters, 70 characters.
72 is the main line, and then like plus the I think there's five new.
It's time consuming and it's hard is the other thing, is like you're not those are never going to be guarantees.
And I absolutely understand the like people who are coming to this that are just going to play multiplayer and are like, I just want all the characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
To me, though, I've actually felt like because it started with such a small pool, I would go around, play each of the characters, mm-hmm. kind of like get back into it because I haven't played it in a little bit. But every time I unlock a new one, I spend a few games playing that new one.
Yeah,
just
totally.
To check them out.
That's
right?
Cool.
So like that felt pretty good, but like I could totally understand the like I'm just here to get
play
back to my main,
and
play competitively and multiplayer, and like why is this unlock mechanic still a thing even? Yeah.
Like there's someone out there whose last character they unlock will be the character they want
right.
to play.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And like that's
frustrating. That's not great.
I'm torn on it because like for me, the thing you're describing of like, oh, I'm gonna like jump from character to character, I'm gonna get a total experience and figure out what all these different characters do
right.
and kind of find my main that way sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I can also
which
understand.
You could codify that yourself if all everything's unlocked, just go down the line.
I wouldn't though.
Exactly. That's the thing. For
I
me, like
that.
This is like kind of the perfect like drip feed of like, oh, there's a new one. Let me play this person, figure them out for a little bit.
Are y'all like full stop having a fun time with the game and like does it feel like a return to form for it? Does it feel like a have you I mean, I know we've talked about your experience with it, Natalie. Have you been a Smash person in the past? Or is this your first real
Yeah, I have played Smash in the past. This feels like the last for the Smash that came out for Wii U was the first time I really got into like watching like videos on specific characters so that I could like get better at just understanding them. So I'm inclined to do that again for this Smash. I had like a sort of down point this weekend where I jumped in like all my friend was having an arena and like a bunch of my friends were jumping in. And everyone was just a lot better than me. Oof. And I lost every single round, like fourth place. And that's when I made my tweet where I was like, in this house, we love and appreciate everyone bad at Smash. Because it felt really bad. And it feels bad because, like, this is a game, like, where, you know, that's what's kind of nice about having the option to play the spirit fights and stuff like that. Because I can still feel like I'm learning and like getting good and understanding things a little bit more because I'm like internalizing specific modifiers. I'm like, okay, so that is how that mechanic works. And like normally that's what it feels like. And so I feel like I'm learning the mechanics of the game actually a bit more deeply through the spirit fights. And then when I come back to like playing regular Smash or whatever, I like just understand what like the workings are a little bit more, which is making me feel better than just being like super bad at the game in general. So it definitely feels like I can't sort of brute force my way through as much. I feel like I need to like really know my character if I'm gonna like main someone. Jumping around from character to character, trying to find something that works is like can be disheartening but also like super satisfying when you find something that clicks really well. So I'm just trying to like keep as casual of a approach to it as possible, because as soon as I like start comparing myself or like feeling like I'm not getting better, like this is not a game I have to be good at. It's like what I need to tell myself. Like there is like the last time I entered a competitive scene with Overwatch, like I really wanted to be good at it, and I spent a really long time getting good at it, and I'm not a fighting game person.
Right.
So there's like such a
you
high...
You just have a good time with it.
Yeah.
Like no one, if you were playing Mario Party, you wouldn't be like, I keep coming in fourth place, I have to get better. I have to just fucking get good at Mario Party.
Yeah.
It's okay to have Smash be that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm just trying to like keep it as light as possible, which is hard when...
Yeah.
Everyone is like so into it, and it's so much about finesse and skill and knowing like your character so well. So I for everyone out there bad at Smash, I see you. You're valid.
Yeah. Wow.
All my love through these trying times.
A nice thing I found about A World of Light is that it actually has it feels like it has the full range of AI like levels in it. Like there'll be fights where I'm like getting totally rocked, and then like I can just go down a different path and fight something easier and kind of like work up to that. So like even in there you can find different levels of how difficult you want it or how much you're gonna push yourself like trying a fight over and over again. So
I need to dig into it. I have been buried under other games and so it is I think it'll be something I play a lot of when I go home for the holiday. It's like a good it's on the Switch. I can just play it on the couch and just hang out. So Speaking of other games I've been playing, I fell hard, as Patrick noted earlier, into Ashen, which is, I talked about this on the last episode, so I don't need to give the high level, but like, last time I compared it to the Dark Souls game. I still think that that holds, though I'm now 45 hours into that game. I think you could get through it quicker than I did. So the big picture thing I want to say is, before I get into my specific playthrough, is having gone through it that deep, I now want to compare it a little bit more to something like Hollow Knight. It is still a Souls-like game in a billion different ways. But like Hollow Knight, the more I play it, the more I think about it as like an extension and response to Dark Souls instead of just something that's trying to repeat Dark Souls. Mm-hmm. There's all these little ways. I'm going to try to write about it this week because it's like completely taking over my brain right now. But all these ways in which it differs from Dark Souls in terms of its geography, it's the way it builds out its spaces and levels. There's way more open areas than Dark Souls has. Like there's a moment where you come out over this place into like the hills, basically it's like the hills of this giant species. Mm-hmm. There are all these different ways you can go, and like Dark Souls has multiple paths a lot, and it does have some more open areas, but this just feels like a big, like almost like a tiny, tiny, tiny valley in Breath of the Wild or something like that. It's not, I've seen some people make Breath of the Wild comparisons. It's not that for me at all. Mm-hmm. Outside of it being something I want to take a lot of screenshots of and it playing with light in really interesting ways.
Souls, like all of its geometry has a purpose.
Yes.
Like it's funneling you to different things. Whereas it sounds like it with Ashen, what I haven't played, but I'm going to start this week, is sometimes it just has space to be.
It's like space to be explored. So here's one of the big differences is you do a lot more running, jumping, and climbing in Ashen. There are bits of it that feel like a 3D platformer because it's if you land near enough a thing, you'll pull yourself up to it.
Okay.
There's lots of climbing on stuff, and also because here's another way in which it's not strictly like Dark Souls. You will always have, unless you go into the options and turn this off, a companion with you, either a multiplayer companion who has entered your game like Journey, and they'll be playing as one of the townspeople who has come into your town. NPCs.
Like Journey, you mean like randomly?
Randomly, yeah. You can go in and set like a number to set a 4-digit number, which then if your friend sets the 4-digit number, they'll kind of connect. Right. And I've heard of people having a good time with that stuff. I haven't messed around with it at all. But you can get a random person, again, Journey, like kind of like wander into your game, or you can turn that off and just have an AI companion, which is mostly what I've been doing. I've done some stuff with random people, and that's been fun, but I really want the consistency of just like, here's the AI person. I can count on the AI acting a very specific way and plan around that, whereas a player might go off to have a different fight than what I want to have right now, as the AI will mostly follow me and deal with what I'm dealing with. And so there are moments when you can use that AI companion to give you a boost up to climb something else. Mm. There's a lot of like sequence breaks that you can find that way, because even in the more open spaces, there are pathways and like clearly, you know, there are walls that are harder to climb or walls that you have to get the right angle or the jump. There's a part about 2/5 of the way through the game where you get a new traversal ability that completely changes how you move through some spaces that lets you kind of like zip between certain points in the world. And so part of the reason I have that 45 hours is like I went back to the beginning of the game. I was like, I'm going to explore everything with this new traversal ability to get all the hidden stuff, which is like a few pieces of equipment and, you know, a lot of the equivalent of like, you know, when you get an item in a Souls game that's just like, here's 10,000 souls. Right. So a lot of that stuff is you can kind of go back through the game to all these other points that you've unlocked to kind of pick up 10,000 souls, 5,000 souls here and here and here. Mm-hmm. It's a game, it's super interesting to have put all this time in it since I last talked about it, because there are things that I expected to unlock and to become part of the game, which have, and there are things that haven't. So, like, there is weapon crafting in this game the way there is in Souls, but it is not this huge, deep branching path where, like, okay, are you going to do the fire build? Are you going to do the raw build? Are you going to do the ashen build, whatever it is? This is just like, okay, it's a linear path to a better weapon. Mm-hmm. I expected to unlock like a point-based system for strength and skill and blah, blah, blah. Mm. None of that is in this game. There's no
stats.
I'm not building a character in that way outside of stuff that is actually a little bit more like Hollow Knight. You have a a set of four minor talismans and then a relic or something like mm-hmm. that. And the minor ones give you things like +2 or 5% more stamina, mm-hmm. you know, some light passive things. Some things are a little more interesting than that, where it's like you do more stun damage. Your hits will stun an enemy more likely mm-hmm. if you're full on health, if you're at high health, or you'll do the further away from base you are, the more health you have, mm-hmm. right? So like the further deeper into the game you get, the more HP you get, mm-hmm. actually.
That's cool.
So there's some neat, like almost like the pins in Hollow Knight.
Yeah.
And the major talismans or the relics are super cool and are things that show up on your character and give Ooh. You cool abilities.
Nice.
So like the first one that you get is this mask that you wear, and it the way it works is like every time you get a hit, a new glowy orb shows up orbiting your head, basically. And you get up to 5 of them. Orbiting's the wrong word. It's like hovering around yeah. your head in like kind of like a triangle shape.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get them, they're basically, it's a damage boost. So if every mm-hmm. hit you do, the next time you do a hit, you'll get another orb, and the orbs you already have will attack. Okay. And so you eventually have 5 orbs around your head, and every time you hit, all 5 of them hit an enemy. Ooh. And you're just doing like a little extra hit, a little extra damage with each hit. And so for most of the game, I was using that and doing like a ton of damage with these rapid hit weapons. I was like hitting, and that was really fun. I now have a thing on that like slowly, over 45 seconds, this mask grows on your face until it's this really cool, like, bone mask. And then for each, like, 15 seconds, it gives you one hit received at lower damage.
Okay.
And so it's like, okay, well, at first you'll take 15% less damage. After 30 seconds, you'll take, you know, 45% less damage. When it grows all the way out after, like, a minute, you just get one free hit where you take no damage.
Nothing.
And so there's all sorts of things like that that end up feeling more like Hollow Knight builds.
Yeah.
Where you're like, okay, I'm gonna have these, like, ability-based decisions to make instead of just pure stat-based decisions.
Yeah.
And that's really
cool. And
those
are interchangeable.
You can go back through it whenever you want.
That's really
cool. I mean, it's not interchangeable in the Hollow Knight sense where you can just do it wherever you want. You have to go back to base.
That's same in Hollow Knight. You can only do it on the bench.
Okay, so this is like only back at HQ, at your town that you're building. You can eventually fast travel. So you immediately start getting items that will just take you back to base without losing your souls, without anything like you just burn this thing and you go back home.
Yeah. Are those pretty readily available?
I must have 40 of them at the end game. I barely ever use them is the thing. I use them a couple of times in like key places.
Yeah.
And then you do unlock fast travel, but it takes a little while. Mm-hmm. I would say if you're playing at home, do the main quests until you get your inventory chest, and then do the side quests until you get fast travel. Those are what I will say. Like, that's like without spoiling stuff. Because you start the game without an inventory chest. Mm-hmm. And like, here's the other big thing, and this is what I'm going to try to write about, is this game is like really optimistic in a way that Dark Souls is not. Dark Souls is at the most skeptical, right? Dark Souls says the Age of Light is ending, and you have a choice to make. Do you want to extend the Age of Light, or do you want to turn into an Age of Shadow? And both of those are seen as are kind of framed skeptically.
It's full of like doubt and
completely. Like, oh, are you really going to extend this fucking bullshit more?
Yeah.
Or like, oh yeah, really? You're going to be the king of the Dark Age? Great, have fun, bud.
Yeah.
None of this is good.
Yeah.
The Dark Souls is a game that I think is very cynical about human relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly has NPCs. So I have favorite Dark Souls NPCs. You know,
right.
But doing favors for them is a difficult thing because the game doesn't show you how to do that.
Right.
It's a lot of like, okay, what the fuck? Okay, where do they want me to show up next?
This game has a quest log.
Like, this game has a map.
The fact that it has a quest log is such an enormous departure from the like design ethos.
But even so, it's like the design ethos and the narrative and the thematic ethos mix really well here because in a game like Dark Souls 3, where you get the Sigmund or Siegfried, whatever his name is in that one. Is it Siegfried in that one? Okay, because it's different. There's different Siegs in all the different Dark Souls.
Right.
Siegfried is like, meet me in this next town. And like you go there, and if you don't happen to catch an assassin who's hiding in a dark room, he gets fucking killed, right? And that stuff happens constantly in the Dark Souls games.
Yeah.
Constantly, constantly, constantly. There's some weird condition that you skipped a step or you didn't go to the right place in the right time. This is like, no. The world is better when people work together. The world is better when they come together. And
Sigmeier, totally off.
I think Sigmund and Siegfried might have been from the previous two games, like, honestly.
Well, Sigmeier shows up in 1 and 3.
Is it the same name?
Same name, same person.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. It's been a while. Anyway, this is a game that believes that like bringing people together means that good things happen.
Yeah.
There are, like, infrastructure gets built. Yeah. And literally, every time you go back to your base after completing a quest or defeating a boss, some new structure is being built. You know, maybe the huntress has moved in, and so she's built, like, a little hunting place. Yeah. And when you go there, you hear, like, drums play that get added to the same main guitar riff that's playing.
Yeah.
When you go over to, like, the tinkerer place, like, a different set of, like, chime starts playing, and he can upgrade your lantern so that you can, like, cast better shadow or give you better... When you bring in this other... There's, like, a giant who you bring in, and she mm-hmm. can, like, teach you how to make potions. And, like, eventually this also starts to filter out into the world. So the world is filled with all these... like travelers who they all speak like Dark Souls NPCs. They're the ones who are like, the light, stay away from the light, Raffet. And like, okay, I don't know what the fuck a Raffet is. I don't know why you're talking to me. Why don't you like the light? I don't know. And bit by bit, those same character models will start filtering into your world or into your town. Mm. And they'll start to say things like, yeah, my eyes hurt. The light hurt my eyes at first, but I'm starting to adjust to it. Or like, I never thought, like, I've done a lot of running away from things in my life. It's nice to be able to like kick back a little bit mm-hmm. and look at the sky. And like bit by bit, they start filtering in and their inventories start to change with what you can trade with them. So by the end game, you can run into people out in the world who are still out in the world, but who now have this huge trading list of items that are really useful to you,
nice.
Including yeah. a really small one that I hadn't thought about as being really useful, but it is. You can buy those items that have like an X amount of souls. Like, okay, then you can buy the 10,000 soul item for like 12,000 souls. And at first I was like, why would I do that? Like, why do I want to burn these 2,000 souls? I'd just rather go spend them. But when you're deep in a dungeon and you're not near a fast travel point, maybe I'd rather spend that 2,000 souls to get the safe 10,000 soul item that I will not lose if I die. Mm. And that's like a neat – there's like all these ways in which this game communicates that it believes in infrastructure and community. And it's a light – I mean, it's a game that starts at the beginning of the Age of Light and says, we want to defend this.
Yeah.
This is worth defending. And there are times that it gets kind of – I wouldn't go all the way to like cringy with it, but like – I am not a particularly optimistic person in that sense. I think big picture, I am optimistic. But like stories of light overcoming darkness, stories of like, if we all just get together, we can build something, can feel trite in a moment in time at which structures and have failed certain people.
Yeah.
Ways in which infrastructure has specifically failed, like marginalized communities and access to infrastructure and access to government and access to representation is said to be distributed equally, but is not actually distributed equally. Right? Look at what's happening with Wisconsin and democracy right now. There's some wild shit popping off. And so there's part of me that like recoils from it, but there's part of me that in the same way that I responded positively to Tetris Effect's deep humanism, I like the idea of having a place. This is the first time since Majula in Dark Souls 2 I've really liked where your home base is in a game like this. Mm. It's the first time that I've been like, I really want to be here. I really want to spend time just walking around and taking video of this place. I mean, also, this game is gorgeous. That's the other thing. It's like, I spent so much time taking screenshots and video and showing off cool moments on Twitter and stuff because I'm really taken by its use of light and darkness,
nice.
Its use of color. It has this very, like... like none of the characters have faces. They're all like kind of flat, like polygonal shapes.
Okay.
And it kind of, for whatever reason, the world feels like you're walking through a sketch at some points. And that is, it has the sense of potential and the sense of like, what could the future, how would you fill the sketch in, right? Some really just really cool levels. And it's absolutely pulling from Dark Souls the way Dark Souls pulls from Dark Souls, right?
Like,
I absolutely had a level that is deep and dark the way Blighttown is in Dark Souls 1. And, like that is the one thing I would say is there were some spikes of difficulty that I think are not in line with the base level difficulty. There's, like, in general, this, I think, is a great first time you're going to play a game like this. The deliberate combat that people know from Dark Souls is here. And so it's a kind of a great training wheels game for that. But by and large, it's not that difficult in comparison to like Dark Souls 1 through 3 or Demon's Souls or Bloodborne even.
Yeah.
But there have been a couple of dungeons that are like big deal. This is where the big boss is at the end of this dungeon that go on a little too long. The first one of them or the second one of them, I guess, is like really scary and dark and like constantly at risk of falling off of a ledge. Oof. The enemies are really tough.
That's that Hollow Knight.
It really is. Like, it's really, really tough.
Yeah.
And I think like they it could have used one more checkpoint, basically.
Yeah.
There's like one at the top and then one at the in the like right before the boss, yeah. And that is it.
That reminds me a lot of Deep Nest.
Yeah, it is like it's like, all right, I'm gonna go in here for 40 minutes. And yeah. Like I'm just gonna be on the edge of my seat feeling like I'm gonna fucking die.
But is there are there options to go different places at that point, or is it like
there's a point at which you have to do you that. Have to, you right. have to that's
because like I'm into I don't know, probably halfway in through Hollow Knight, and I'm still having like dealt with
Hollow Knight. Deep Nest or yeah, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, I think it's a similar situation in some ways. Like throughout the bulk of the game, I felt like I had multiple places to go.
Right.
It's a more linear game than a Souls game or like Hollow Knight. Like, it is not a big open world map where you're going in different directions. Mm-hmm. There is like does anybody remember when Crysis 2 was on the press circuit and the immediate response was like, this game looks linear. Crysis is all about openness. And they're like, okay, look, you have to understand what we're going to do is funnel you from like mid-size arena to mid-size arena. You're going to go into the zone and it's going to be a huge zone, but smaller than anything just Crysis's huge open island was. This is like that. So it's like, there isn't a single big map where you can like sequence break and get to the end game really quick. You have to go down this kind of tunnel of content, mm-hmm. but it's a really broad tunnel, if that makes sense, where you go from the Ashlands into the hillside or whatever, and both the Ashlands and the hillside are big and open and you can go wherever you want, but like you can't just skip the Ashlands and go to the hillside, right?
Okay.
I'm really, really, really liking it. Again, I'm at the last boss. I got to the last boss last night at like 3 a.m., I could not make that into a win. That was,
damn.
It was really. I'm really mad at myself. I want to beat that fucking game. I really want to beat that game. I don't know that I have it in me. It's a really hard last boss. We'll see.
Quick question: does it have any PvP elements?
No PvP elements. No.
Okay.
No.
Cool.
Hell yeah.
No one's gonna jack your shit.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It doesn't. I can imagine them adding some as like DLC or something.
It feels thematically not the thing a about little this bit. Game.
Yeah. Okay. Though I don't know. We'll see.
I gotta hoist myself real quick. All it's right. actually Sigward in 3.
3. Sigward is 3.
Yeah, and okay. Sigmire in 1. And they have it's the same armor.
Yeah,
and
I know. It's
think
a family.
It's the same voice actor yeah. which is why I was like, that's the same person, right? But no, I'm fucking wrong.
Wait, then who is 2? 2 is Sigward?
Was he into? I didn't. I never.
That's Sigmund, Freud.
There's different Sigs. I think it's different Sigs in each one. There's also one with
Sigurd is
like
3. Yeah.
There's also definitely one with like a woman who is the Sig. I think that might be 2. Anyway.
Ashen sounds really cool. I really want to play that.
Yeah, me too. Ashen. It is on Game Pass, just like Mutant Year Zero. Also on Game Pass on Xbox One.
I feel like if those games had come out like 2-3 weeks ago, they probably would have made my list this year, which is so what happened to December suddenly?
Smash,
like,
Ashen, Year Zero.
Yeah.
December isn't safe anymore.
Below is coming.
Oh, really, really, really quick. I put more time into Just Cause 4 and have actually really liked Just Cause 4. I turned a corner on it and I started to feel better about the grapple hook stuff and have gotten better at doing funny grapple tricks. And like messing around with their like balloon system and their engine system to like hook up little tiny engine things on it, and that has made that game so much more fun to play. So I need to keep putting time in it to see if it's like fun to play for 30 or 40 hours.
Yeah.
But the extra 5 I've put into it have actually helped me wrap my head around like how to play it more like Breath of the
Hitman.
Wild and like Hitman. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then, I've gotten like some serious Hitman vibes from the videos that I've seen of just how people are kind of crafting out situations.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. Anything else? Natalie, are you not going to talk about?
Well, I don't know. We ran.
We have run late.
Yeah.
Do you want to save it? Do you want to save your Lego Harry Potter story?
Yeah, we can save it.
Okay, everyone's on pins and needles.
Sorry. Next time.
All you Potter stands out there. what's the name for
Potterheads?
Is it Potterheads?
I think that's what I would call them probably.
That's potheads.
Oh, okay. My bad.
Potterheads.
Totally different thing.
Totally different thing.
Mm. Okay. Well, I'm Austin Walker. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Cotto?
At @A_Cotto_appears.
Patrick.
@PatrickLubbock.
Rob Zachney.
@RobZachney.
Natalie.
At Natalie Watson.
As always, you can find everything we do at twitter.com/waypoint, waypoint.vice.com. Shout out to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP panel machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Shout outs to Danielle, who I think is just off today, but has been in the trenches. The union trenches, doing a lot of union negotiation. If you're missing Danielle, send her your energy and power as the bargaining unit here continues to negotiate with management. Good luck to the bargaining unit. I think that's it for us. Again, this week might be a little light as we continue to bank stuff for the next couple of weeks. Though we will definitely be back with at least a kind of short waypoints later this week. And we may end up having a Friday episode. We'll see. We'll see. But we're going to play it by ear as we start prepping for the end of the year. That's going to do it for us. Can someone help take me out? Danielle isn't here to do it.
So the Bears can clinch with a win next week at home. It's going to come down to Bears, Packers, Soldier Field.
Wow.
That will put the division to bed.
I believe it's pronounced Soldier Field.
Soldier Field. Soldier Field. Yep.
That was when they reconstructed it. That's when they.
He's
when
from Chicago. Is that?
Whoa.
Got
that deep.
No, we're a chance city now. Sorry.
Wow.
Wow.
Okay. On that note, have a good week, everybody. Peace.
Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.